Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out there on the edge of the prairie. Turned cold on Thursday. We got a little bit of snow on Wednesday, just a little bit, about 20 minutes of snow, and just a little sort of dusting of snow, a little decorator snow, and then it turned bitterly cold. And a lot of people not used to slippery sidewalks in Lake Wobegon took a tumble and felt foolish about it afterwards, as well they should. They're not wearing the right kind of shoes whatsoever. There was a meteor shower up in the sky. Meteors falling stars, we used to call them until we knew better. And there were several cars that went off the road Monday, Tuesday night looking at falling stars. There was one man who drove right off the road. He had a big old Cadillac, and he drove into the ditch. Clint went with the wrecker to tow him out, and he saw the bumper sticker, "Christ is coming soon, are you ready?" And the man was lying out in the grass looking up at the sky. Evidently, he thought those falling meteors were angels, and he had his cell phone there, and he tried to call down to the cities, and Clint told him, "You can't get good cell phone coverage there." So he was very anxious. They attached a cable to the bumper and pulled it out. Christ rose up from the ditch and up onto the road. And finally, on the way into town, he got a cell phone connection, and he called down to Minneapolis, and he said, Mother, are you there? Thank God. So the second coming had not occurred, and so he has more time now. I guess it was. Pastor Liz preached on the third chapter of Luke, where it says, "He who has two coats must give one to the poor, and those who have food must do likewise," which was a nice boost for the warm coat drive at Lake Wobegon Lutheran Church, and for the food shelf as well. Don't really need to tell people that. She should have given a sermon about not walking out on ice until it really is all iced over. There's some hormonal drive on the part of heavyset men to walk out on what looks like a surface of ice out on the east side of the lake, and they, you know, they get out about 50 feet, and whoa, they go down. Big man in a snowmobile suit with big moon boots on, and you know, falling straight down into 10, 12, 15 feet of water. And the last thought to go through his mind was, "Boy for dumb." Boy, this was not too bright, was it? That was the last thought to pass through that brain. They don't bring this up at the memorial service, but everybody knows that it's true. What is the rush? There was some ice on the east side of the lake, and there were six men out there fishing on the ice, though it's posted, "Don't walk out on the ice." And they were out there fishing, and there was a wind that came up and a crack in the ice, and then there was a wider crack, and then it just drifted away, and the crack was 15, 20, 30, 50 feet wide, and there they were on an ice floe like a scene out of Uncle Tom's Cabin. And of course, being manly men, they didn't want to cry out in helpless, pitiful voices, you know, for somebody to come. They just bellowed a little bit, and they sounded like musk oxen out there. And one of them kept on fishing, casting out into open water, of which there was a great deal, I don't know, hoping to hook some enormous walleye who would tow them back to shore. Nothing. But Gary and Leroy came to the rescue, and they called up Clint, and he came out with the wrecker, and they threw this this light rope way out there. It took them several tries, and they finally got the light rope out there, and they pulled on the light rope, and they pulled out a heavier rope, and then that pulled on a heavier rope, and they hooked it onto the ice. There was a gaffling hook there, and Clint gently winched them back to shore, and they leaped off the ice floe and they galloped through 3 feet of water. They just couldn't wait to get to their cars. They were afraid that Gary and Leroy would take down their names and it would be in the police blotter in the Lake Wobegon Herald Star on Tuesday. But I mean, in a town like this, everybody knows who it was. No big mystery about that. And for sure their wives know who this was. And so you can imagine when they went back home what that's like. When you've done something just monumentally stupid, how quiet she is. Asks if you would like some eggs and bacon. Brings you the paper. Brings you your slippers. You look at her. Is she smirking? She seems to be. Smirking a little bit. And you just wish she would just come out and say it. Just say it. Just say, you are dumb enough to be twins, you know? You are stupid, stupid. Why would you do that? You are so dumb. It takes you 2 hours to watch 60 Minutes. Sit on the TV and you look at the couch. I mean, it's... Only way they could get you out of the second grade was to set the school on fire. You just wish she would get to it. But it's Christmas. It's a generous, gentle time of year. College kids are home. They've come home after their semester finals. And what they want is to eat. Eat everything in sight. And then to sleep. Sleep. They can sleep these amazing sleeps, 10, 12 hours. Corinne Tollerud once slept for 16 hours coming home from college. They had to hold a mirror under her nostrils, pry open her eyelids, and her eyes moved, and so they let her sleep longer. She came home exhausted. That was last year. She came home and she had this boyfriend she was thinking about. She didn't want to talk to her mother about him. He was down in Minneapolis, and he was busy writing her a beautiful letter about how he wanted his life to join with hers and what a difference she had made in his life. And it took him a long time to finish it. And in the meantime, after he'd put it in the mail, she called him up and she broke off the whole thing because he was just too narcissistic, too self-centered. And that was a huge relief to her, and she didn't need to sleep so much. And then his letter came in the mail, which was proof of what she had told him. And now that he had been with her, he understood himself so much better. Interesting things happen. Christmas vacation, people struck with guilt. Carl Krebsbach, every Christmas, thinks about the time that he was in Los Angeles. He was there to visit his daughter Carla, and her husband, the pet orthodontist, was still in veterinary school, and they were broke and owed money, college debts. And he was walking back to his hotel from there. Dormitory. It was on Christmas Eve, and he came across this man who was three sheets to the wind, dressed in a powder blue tuxedo, and he was incoherent. And Carl went to a payphone. They had payphones back then, and he called for an ambulance, and he was patting the man's pocket to see if he could find his billfold, find out who he was. And he found an enormous roll of hundreds and some thousands in his pants pocket. And he counted it, and it was $67,000. No honest man walks around with $67,000 in his pocket. And so he kept the money, and he sent some of it off to churches who care, who have soup kitchens for the poor, and the rest of it he put into 6 small envelopes, and he mailed the envelopes to his daughter, 1 a month, saying this was a bequest from an old uncle who had died and not pleased to tell your mother about this. I'm doing this because you need the money more than I do. He's thought about this every year, felt guilty about this, wondered where this fits in on the moral scale. He went to Father Wilmer. Father Wilmer, though he's, you know, he's not a really devout Catholic, but he went to Father Wilmer to confess this sin. And Father Wilmer was telling him about the time he was in Chicago on a Christmas Eve and feeling very lonely. And all of these women came up to him on the street and asked him if he would like to have a good time. And he was thinking about dropping out of seminary. He wasn't sure. He didn't know what they meant by have a good time. And then he went off with one and find out. And then he went back to seminary, and that convinced him to stay in the priesthood. Carl did not expect to hear a confession from a priest at Christmas, but there it was. So he kept a secret to himself. Interesting time of year. Marilyn Tollerud, Corinne's mother, her old Uncle Harry, 93 years old, demented. She's got him now living up on their second floor. She went down to Minneapolis to find him. He was living alone in his enormous mansion there on Mount Curve. Just squalor, filth and squalor, garbage everywhere, hoarding for the last. It looked like he'd never thrown anything ever away. He was crazy, ranting and raving, and she wrestled him into the car. 93, she brought him back to Lake Wobegon. Couldn't leave him there alone. She brought him back. He's up there in their guest bedroom, which she has found a key for. She's locked him in there. He's pounding on the door. He's yelling about a hostage situation. And he wants a call to his attorney. What does she do with this man? She's not yet faced the issue of trying to get him into a bathtub. She doesn't even want to think about that. He's up there. Christmas, what can you do? Can she put him in the car and drive by the Good Shepherd home and just leave him there like a foundling child, a foundling geezer? Just push him out the door and drive away? No, she can't. It's not far enough away. So you have some idea why God came to earth in the form of his infant child rather than an ancient man, just to have a better chance. Merry Christmas to you all from the people of Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.